like a mirror. They wouldn't stay that way for long. It had been raining all day, making the dreary afternoon seem never-ending, making the hour seem later than it actually was. She left the headquarters on Via Tasso at 5:30, a half hour later than the prearranged meeting time. She pulled a scarf over her hair to protect it from the rain and ran, hoping it would only appear she was trying to catch a bus or streetcar, rushing to the trattoria, praying Aldo had waited. She slowed to a walk and stood in line for her pastry as instructed. But Aldo didn't fall in behind her. She bought a sweet roll and stood under the dripping, striped canopy, eyes scanning, nibbling at the cinnamon and sugar-encrusted luxury that should have been savored. She was too uptight to savor it, and ended up eating the whole thing without even tasting it. It was 6 o'clock, curfew, and she needed to get off the street. And then she saw him, walking briskly toward her, a folded newspaper clutched in his hands. She dusted the sugar from her hands and threw her napkin away, trying to appear casual. She stuffed her icy fingers into her coat pockets and started moving down Via Regala, away from the trattoria and toward Aldo, when a whistle blew and a shout rang out behind her. It was just barely curfew, and she didn't think the shout was directed at her, so she kept walking, not even turning her head. But Aldo's eyes jerked toward the source of the ruckus, and she saw him shove the newspaper inside his coat. The document pouch must be inside. "Keep walking," he hissed, not glancing at her as he passed. A whistle rang out again. Eva kept walking, just as instructed.
"Buonasera, comandante,"
she heard Aldo say, his voice cheerful and slow and far too loud. He sounded drunk.
"Care for a drink? I'm buying."
He would be fine. Aldo would be fine. He was an older man with good papers, papers he'd painstakingly created himself. He would be fine. The commander said something in German, and Aldo laughed uproariously. She recognized the voice. It wasn't a commander. It was Captain von Essen. Alarm clanged in her skull, and she did as she was told. Her coat was dark, and so was the scarf over her hair. She wouldn't be distinguishable from the back. She kept walking. Her heels clicked against the cobblestones, and she kept her pace steady, her eyes forward. She was at least 30 feet away, 40 feet away, 50. "Walk, walk, walk, walk," she commanded, the rhythm of the words and the tapping of her heels urging her to move faster, faster, faster. As she neared the corner, she turned, ducking behind a gnarled olive tree and darting a glance back at Aldo, unable to slip away without first knowing how he fared. Time doesn't stop or give warning. It simply ticks along, marking time, ignoring humanity. Von Essen stood behind Aldo. He had placed the muzzle of his gun at the base of Aldo's neck, almost like he was using the weapon to lift the collar of his raincoat. Then he pulled the trigger. Aldo Finzi crumpled to the ground like his legs had suddenly ceased to function. There was no protest, not from Aldo, not from the handful of uniformed men who now surrounded him, not from Eva. No screams, no exclamations, just the sound of a weapon being discharged. And time kept its schedule without a thought for the man whose time had just run out. Tick-tock, tick-tock, right on time. Von Essen put his gun back in the holster and pulled a silver cigarette case from a breast pocket. The click of the case counted off another second. The crisp strike of a match, another. A flame swelled and retreated, almost like it took a single breath and exhaled, and the captain lit his cigarette and snuffed it out. He dropped the match on the inert form at his feet, and a thin wisp of smoke rose up from the dead man, as if his spirit rose and dissipated in the soggy dusk. Ava stood, staring, as cold and as silent as time itself. She was the only other person out. Nothing cleared the area as effectively as a German patrol.
Er war ein Jude,
von Essen said simply, his voice carrying down the street. He didn't even try to moderate his volume. Why would he? Aldo was only a Jew. He'd only killed a Jew.
How do you know?
One of his companions prodded Aldo with the toe of his boot, as if asking him to verify the captain's claim.
I told him to drop his pants,
von Essen said simply. The soldier used his foot to turn Aldo to his back.
Can't hide the circumcised dick.
Laughter. Ha ha ha. Tick, tick, tock.
Leave him for now. It is good for the Italians to see what happens when you don't heed the law. They were warned. All Jews were to report months ago. He didn't. Now he's dead.
They continued back the way they came, unconcerned, their footfalls fading with their voices. Ava waited until she couldn't hear them any longer. She was still rooted to the spot where she'd turned for one last look. She walked toward Aldo on legs that shook and wobbled like she was as drunk as Aldo had pretended to be. 40 feet, 30 feet, 20, then 10. It was almost full dark, and though the rain had stopped, the air was still thick with moisture that threatened to fall. The wet streets shone blackly like Aldo's blood. But she wouldn't look at the blood. Ava kept her eyes on Aldo's face. His eyes were closed, mercifully so, and his glasses were slightly askew, making him look like a child who had fallen asleep reading. She crouched beside him and felt for the newspaper he'd shoved inside his coat. There. It was fat with documents, and it was still warm.
Oh, God! Oh, dear God! She moaned, feeling the bile rise.
She wouldn't think about it. She wouldn't. Gritting her teeth, she dropped the pouch down the front of her dress, ignoring the sticky heat against her skin. The tight belt at her waist kept it from falling through to her feet. Then purely by feel, she pulled the flaps of Aldo's coat together, wanting to hide his nakedness, wanting to preserve his dignity in death. She straightened his glasses and rose, pulling her coat over the telltale bulge of the pouch. Then she made herself move, one step in front of the other, the cadence of her feet joining the metronome of time marching on and on and on without relief. Angelo was waiting, pacing down the long aisle between the pews, his hands clasped, his head bent. She'd taken too long, and she realized he must have spent the last hours worrying that something had happened to her. Something had happened to her. He must have sensed her approach, and his head shot up, his face softening with relief when he saw her standing at the back of the church.
"I'm back, Angelo," she said woodenly. "I have the provisions."
That was the word they always used to refer to everything and anything. One never knew who was hiding, listening, watching. Provisions were vague. Documents were not. She turned and made her way to the little door that led to the basement of the church. She needed to get rid of Aldo's blood. Moments later, she heard Angelo descending the stairs. The pattern of his steps, thud-tap, 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 unmistakable. Her mind drifted back to the retreating footsteps of Aldo's killer, and she began to shake. She couldn't unbutton her coat. Her fingers didn't obey her orders.
"Ava, what happened? What took you so long?"
He was growing alarmed. She could hear it in his voice. He reached out to her, but Ava sidestepped him, unable to meet his gaze. Concentrating, she managed to shove the top button through its hole, and then the next. When she reached the fifth button, she reached down the neckline of her dress and pulled the pouch free, tossing it at Angelo.
He caught it easily and set it atop the small chest of drawers, his eyes trained on her face. He didn't even look at it. Eva wondered if there was now blood on his hands. Her brassiere was stuck to her chest, and she was panting, pulling in just enough air to keep her standing, but not enough to feel the nausea that threatened to rise every time she breathed too deeply.
I had to walk.
Her answer was so delayed it sounded stilted.
All the way?
Yes, all the way.
But the curfew. Eva, you could have been arrested.
I had to walk. I have blood on my hands, on my clothes. I didn't dare take a streetcar.
Blood? Are you hurt? Eva, damn it, look at me.
He grabbed at her hands and turned them over. Eva's eyes followed his, unable to avoid it any longer. The blood was minimal, surprisingly. She'd kept her hands in her pockets as she'd walked. There would be bloodstains in her pockets. She pulled her hands from Angelo's and shrugged her coat from her shoulders.
Madre di Dio, Angelo cried.
The blood on her yellow dress was not minimal. It had soaked through the thin cotton between her breasts, narrowing like a funnel as it reached her belt. Angelo grabbed her again, this time more insistently, loosening the belt and tugging at her collar. He ripped the fabric and buttons flew as he tried to get to the source of the blood.
She didn't even try to stop him.
The bra beneath looked worse, and Angelo yanked on the clasp and tossed it aside as his hands ran over her skin, across her chest and stomach, his fingers searching for a wound, his face as white as the panties she now stood in, her dress pulling around her feet, her hands covering her breasts.
It's not mine!
His eyes rose from her skin to her face and his hands stilled.
It's not my blood. It's Aldo's. He's dead.
Oh, no, he groaned. No.
Yes, he is,
Eva insisted brokenly.
Tell me everything,
Angelo commanded, leading her to the sink. As she talked, tripping over the terrible words, he washed her quickly, his hands deferential, his movements sure, cleaning the blood from her skin.
I left him lying in the street,
Eva whimpered, the horror starting to break through the shock.
No, you didn't. They left him. They left him lying in the street.
I tried not to look at the blood. He was drenched from the neck down. The bullet must have come out the other side.
She started to retch and shake, and abandoned the sink to run to the toilet. Angelo held her hair and stood silently beside her until she'd emptied herself out. Then he wrapped her in a blanket and led her to the small bed. Somewhere in a very distant part of Eva's female brain, she registered that Angelo was seeing her without her clothes. That he'd removed her clothes and then washed her. And she mourned for yet another first that had been ruined by war. Or made possible by war. He brought her water and demanded that she drink. And Eva obeyed gratefully, wincing as the cold liquid hit her empty belly.
Breathe deeply. You have to breathe, Eva.
Von Essen didn't even ask for his papers. He didn't even ask. He wanted to humiliate him. And then he killed him.
Her teeth chattered as she spoke, and she realized how cold she was. She shivered desperately, and the blanket fell back down, baring her shoulders and breasts, and an expanse of skin that was covered in goose flesh. Angelo pulled the blanket up again and forced her to lie down. He pulled another blanket over her and tucked it around her firmly before he lay down beside her and pulled her against him, holding her tightly until her shivering subsided and her teeth stopped clacking together. All the while, he talked and encouraged her to talk, as if he knew she needed to get it all out, every last detail.
It's not uncommon. It happens all the time. The Jewish men are even more vulnerable than the women in that regard. Their very flesh gives them away.
So Aldo died to deliver documents that are of no use? Documents that couldn't even save him?
Ava's voice rose in disbelief, slightly hysterical once again.
Shh, shh, Ava,
Angelo soothed, smoothing her hair.
Aldo's documents have saved many people. You have saved many people, Ava. You realize that, don't you?
Ava just shook her head, not ready for accolades just yet. She had walked away, and Aldo had saved her, not the other way around.
It was random. Just random. I was almost to him. Maybe 10 feet away when the voice called out behind me. Aldo told me to keep walking, and I did. I walked on, and Aldo walked to his death.
Angelo was silent then, and she could feel his horror. It echoed her own. But his hand was heavy and comforting, a continual caress, as he smoothed her hair over and over again. They stayed that way for a long time, Ava cocooned in threadbare blankets and Angelo's embrace. She started feeling sleepy, the return of warmth and the loss of adrenaline leaving her loose and drained. But she didn't want to sleep. She was afraid if she slept, Angelo would leave, and she would dream about terrible things and have to endure them alone. The thought made her heart kick up, and her breath shortened all over again.
Ava,
Angelo's voice lifted in concern, feeling the return of her tension. She rolled into him, pressing her lips against his neck, just above the white collar that gleamed like a halo in the darkness. He didn't react at first, as if she'd taken him by surprise. She opened her lips and tasted the scratchy skin of his throat, and felt him swallow back a curse or a groan. She couldn't be sure. She lifted her face and found the edge of his jaw, pressing insistent kisses along the squared-off plane, hungry for his mouth and for the mind-numbing pleasure she knew would follow. She needed him to kiss her and make her forget everything but him for just a little while. She found his lips, and he responded instantly, feverishly, only to tear himself away a second later.
Ava, no,
he said softly and sat up, releasing her. She tried to follow him, but she was pinned by the blankets he'd wrapped her in, and she squirmed desperately, suddenly frantic to be free of them. She was panting, panicking, suffocating. She bucked, releasing her arms and loosening the blankets around her body. She pushed them down around her waist, then kicked her legs free so that she was stretched out, uncovered and uncowering. She lay winded and relieved, her eyes on the low stone ceiling, the cold air welcome on her skin. Then she looked down at herself, staring at her body through new eyes, seeing herself as Angelo would see her. Above the plain white panties, her stomach was flat. Too flat, the deprivations of war taking the softly rounded curve from her belly and her hips, making her more girlish than womanly. But the shadows were alluring, forgiving even, and her breasts were still full and high, the tips a dusky red against her pale skin. Ava looked from her body to Angelo's face. He was staring down at her unclothed form, his eyes desperate, his jaw clenched, as if fighting against the very demons that had swarmed the dark street and taken Aldo's life. Then he lifted his gaze and his eyes locked on hers. The raw devotion in his face sent a surge of something hot and powerful slicing through her chest. She had been powerless for so long. She reached for Angelo's hand and pulled it to her mouth, kissing his palm before dragging his fingers over her lips, her chin, down the length of her neck, and across her chest. She thought she heard him say her name, but there was a roaring in her ears and she didn't respond. She couldn't. She pressed his hand against her left breast, the base of his palm resting against her thundering heart, his fingers brushing sensitive flesh. She shuddered and closed her eyes. It felt so safe and warm, so heavy and delicious. He didn't pull away, but he didn't curve his hand against her or make the caress his own. She didn't care. She was filled with reckless desire, and she slid his flattened palm sideways to include her other breast, the peaks pebbling in response. His hand trembled against her skin, and her belly vibrated like a violin string as the bow was slowly pulled across it. Her body hummed with a building crescendo, and Ava dragged Angelo's hand down over her ribs, across her abdomen, past the hollow between her hip bones. Then she pushed his palm lower, gasping at the contact. She could feel her pulse there, an aching, insistent thrumming, as if her heart had followed Angelo's hand. Maybe it was her brush with death, watching a life end so violently right before her eyes. Maybe it was just the incessant threat that lurked at the edge of every single moment. But her body burned with desperate life, with frantic need. And the simple weight of Angelo's hand pressed at her center was enough to have her clinging to his wrist, tears leaking from the corners of her eyes as her body tightened and then teetered, tumbling over and over, quaking and pulsing against his warm palm. And still Angelo was silent and unmoving, an unwilling participant. And as Ava's head cleared and her body cooled, she became instantly hyper-aware, her sense and inhibitions returning with her release. Bliss became intense mortification. She let go of Angelo's wrist at once and curled away from him, his fingers trailing heavily across her hip as she rolled and withdrew. She pressed her hand to her mouth to muffle the sobs, but now she cried from shame, humiliated by what she'd done, by what he'd seen, by what she'd made him do. And still her body sang softly, betraying her. She felt him shift, and her blankets were drawn up loosely around her shoulders, covering her nakedness and her shame. His hand rose to her face, and he wiped her tears away, brushing them back into her hair. "Don't cry, Ava. Please don't cry," he whispered. "I understand." She only cried harder, not able to believe him. Then he was holding her again, turning her so her face was pressed into his neck, her arms folded between them. His breathing was harsh and his entire body was rigid, like he wanted to bolt.
"I'm sorry, Angelo,"
she moaned softly.
"You have nothing to be sorry for."
He pressed his lips to her temple and continued to smooth her hair, reassuring her, shushing her like her father used to.
"Shh, Ava. Shh. I understand."
But her tears continued to fall. Ava drifted off that way, her face in the crook of his neck, his hand in her hair, tears on her cheeks. When Angelo was certain she was deeply sleeping, he moved away from her, his body aching with need and denial. His left arm was numb and his back stiff from holding such an unyielding position. He hadn't wanted her to feel what she did to him. He didn't want her to know that his will was crumbling. He said he understood, and he did. She'd been desperate for the affirmation that only the most intense experiences, sex, danger, pain, can provide. He'd heard enough confessions of battle-weary soldiers who had succumbed to self-pleasure or sex, or worse, in the oddest of circumstances. It was a very natural reaction. He understood. But it had required every ounce of his faith and his self-control not to partake or participate, not to take advantage of her vulnerable moment. but he hadn't stopped her or averted his eyes. And just like King David watching Bathsheba bathe, he suspected that it would cost him. But first, it had cost her. She had apologized, and he had wanted to thank her. The thought shamed him, but it was the truth. It was one of the most beautiful things he had ever seen. She was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen. And he'd been captured by a real sense of surreal wonder until he'd seen her despair, her embarrassment, and then he'd wanted to cry too. He'd failed her over and over, and he didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to heal her or hold her or save her. He didn't know how to be what she needed. All he knew was that he loved her desperately. Desperately. He wearily climbed the stairs and slipped into the silent church. Lighting a candle, he dropped his tired face into his hands that smelled like Ava's hair, and groaned out his fears and his failings, asking God not to withdraw because of his weakness, and thanking Aldo Finzi, wherever his spirit had flown, for saving Ava's life at the expense of his own.
8 March, 1944. Confession. I like Greta von Essen. I can't help but like her. She is kind, and she is sad. A very sympathetic combination. We are all products of the places we are raised, the people who love us or have power over us, and the things we hear over and over again as we grow. Our beliefs don't have to be based on personal experience, but when they are, they can rarely be altered. Greta has been told over and over that she is a beautiful disaster who has failed at the only thing she was created for. Her experiences have not disproved that. Greta is shallow, but I have a feeling it is only because depth would drown her. So she floats on the surface and does her best to smile vapidly at her life and the men she is tied to. I have let her mother me, not because I want a new mother, but because she needs a child. And if I'm being honest, she provides me a small measure of safety, a buffer against the captain. I like Greta von Essen, but I hate her husband. When I close my eyes, I see his face, calm and cold, the way it looked before he pulled the trigger and killed Aldo. Eva Rosselli. Chapter 17. March.
Lieutenant Colonel Kapler sent for Captain von Essen first thing Friday morning, and the angry shouting that reverberated through the surrounding offices was the talk of the staff at Gestapo headquarters by lunchtime. Eva rarely saw the lieutenant colonel, and she was happy to keep it that way. But Captain von Essen worshipped him and did everything in his power to please him. Apparently, Himmler himself was in Rome, bearing word of the Führer's disappointment with Kepler's inability to rein in the Italian resistance in and outside of Rome, as well as to uncover and smash the underground that provided safe haven for soldiers, partisans, and Jews. Kepler and von Essen had been drawing up plans all week that included maps and consults with a thin patrician Italian man with a German name, a man named Peter Koch, who had established his own militarized band of Italian fascists. The maps made Eva nervous, and the fascist leader made her skin crawl. Thankfully, there was no sign of Koch that morning. But when Captain von Essen returned to his own office an hour later, his face was flushed and his eyes were bright, as if the confrontation with the Gestapo chief had brought on a raging fever. "Follow me," he commanded as he passed Eva's desk. She grabbed her dictation notebook and a pencil and trotted after him, hoping whatever had possessed him wasn't contagious. He didn't wait to tell her what was on his mind.
"Herr Himmler is in town, and the lieutenant colonel wants to impress him. There will be a dinner tomorrow evening with the most important people in Italy. Rich men, Beautiful women, wine, finest food, the best entertainment.
Apparently, the responsibility for the gala had been delegated to the captain. If the captain was a smart man, he would call his wife.
"What is the nicest hotel in Rome?" he asked Eva.
"The Villa Medici, Captain. It overlooks the Spanish Steps, and it's reasonably close to the Trevi Fountain and all the finest shopping. It's a beautiful hotel."
It was the first thing that came to Eva's mind. Newly restored and renovated with an acclaimed chef, she'd overheard two women talking about it on the streetcar that morning. She parroted what she'd heard, hoping the women knew what they were talking about. The captain was on his phone immediately, demanding to be put through to the Villa Medici. Eva made a hasty retreat, but could hear him snapping out orders and demands.
"Fräulein Bianco!"
he called, causing her to jump from her desk and quickly return to his office.
"Where can I find entertainment at this short notice? The hotel has a small dinner band, but I need something more. Something special."
Eva was at a loss. She didn't think the captain would be interested in Catholic children's choirs or chanting monks, which were about the only thing she had access to at the moment.
"You."
He stood from his chair abruptly and rounded his desk, pointing at her accusingly.
"You!"
he repeated, practically shouting.
"What?"
"Himmler loves classical music. You are a violinist. A very good violinist, if I recall. Bach, Beethoven, Mozart. You will play. A beautiful Italian woman playing the violin. Perfect!"
He slapped his gloves against his desk victoriously and reached for his phone once more, as if it were decided. Eva could only stutter and stare.
"But I would have to practice. I haven't performed in ages, and I have absolutely nothing appropriate to wear to such an affair," she protested.
"I've heard you play. You will be wonderful. You have until 8 o'clock tomorrow evening to practice, and Greta will help you with the dress. I will send for her immediately."
He waved his hand toward the door, signaling that he was done with her.
"I can't do it. Please, Captain."
"You will do it. I am leaving you no choice in the matter. Must I hold a gun to your head and demand that you play?"
He raised his blonde eyebrows and cocked his head, waiting for a response. Eva stared at him in horror. Did he think this was funny?
"I have all the confidence in the world that you will be able to pull this off, lovely Eva," he said softly. "I know you will not let me down. Now be a very good girl and leave my office."
Greta was ecstatic, rushing Eva from one shop to the next, insisting on dressing her from top to bottom. Lacy lingerie and silky hose that were as rare as a cup of espresso made with real coffee beans, instead of the chicory most Italians were drinking. She had the dressmaker squeeze Eva into a red dress so low and tight that Eva broke out in nervous hives and refused to come out of the dressing room.
"Something elegant that I can actually play in, Greta, please. I don't think you are understanding the gravity of the situation. I can't breathe. If I can't breathe, I can't think. And if I can't think, I can't play. If I don't play, your husband and I will be facing the firing squad."
Greta tittered as if such a thing were preposterous, but she found a sleeveless, glimmering black sheath with a low, square neck that skimmed Eva's body without being tight.
"We will paint your nails, and you will wear red on your lips. Wear your hair down. We want to play up your Italian beauty."
"No, Greta," Eva thought. Drawing attention to herself was the most dangerous thing she could do. As if hearing Eva's thoughts, Greta added slyly,
"When Herr Himmler sees you, he will want to make you his mistress."
Greta laughed again, but there was a concerned crease between her brows, as if it had just occurred to her that Eva worked for her husband. Eva's stomach knotted all over again.
"Are you trying to terrify me, Greta?"
Eva asked softly.
I cannot think of anything worse than catching Herr Himmler's eye.
He is a very powerful man. Greta shrugged, her eyes a guileless blue.
I have no desire to be with a powerful man. What kind of man do you want?
Greta asked, removing the pins from Eva's hair so she could see the effect. She ran her fingers through the curls and pulled all the hair to one side. Her eyes narrowed thoughtfully.
A good man. A kind man. A man who loves me.
Angelo's face rose up in her mind, but she pushed his image away. She had humiliated herself in front of him, and every time she thought about him, her temperature rose. Her skin flushed, and her body felt like a wanton stranger's. They hadn't talked about what had occurred between them after Aldo's death. She couldn't. Angelo wouldn't. So they'd simply gone on, pretending it hadn't happened.
"You are in love with someone,"
Greta interrupted her reverie. She was staring at Eva with wide eyes.
"I can see it in your face. You are all pink and rosy. Tell me." "What? No, I'm not,"
Eva stammered.
"Yes, you are. There is someone. I'm going to be relentless until I find out who he is. He is just a boy from home. It is nothing. I don't want to talk about him,"
Eva said.
"When was the last time you saw him?"
Greta wheedled.
"Greta, please. I don't want to talk about him."
She didn't want to talk about him. It was enough that she thought about him constantly. About the hopelessness of loving a man who would not yield. The hopelessness of a life spent hiding and pretending. When the war ended and she went home to Florence, what then? The thought of returning to the time when she'd spent years on end without seeing him was worse than her fear of death. It was worse than Via Tasso, worse than the convent with the quiet walls and the quieter nuns. It was unimaginable. Greta pouted, an adorable, practiced expression that Eva was sure she used on her husband.
"But what else is there? Love is the only excitement we women have. Maybe when the war is over I will think about love. Right now, I'm too afraid to think of anything else. I just want to survive tomorrow night."
Eva changed the subject.
"There are worse things than being afraid,"
Greta said gravely, her sudden sadness catching Eva off guard.
"What?"
Eva asked softly.
"Being resigned is far worse. Being afraid lets you know you still want to live." "Then I must want to live very badly," Eva whispered, "because I am very afraid."
Greta squeezed her arm, their eyes meeting in the mirror. They were a striking contrast. Greta, blonde and statuesque. Eva, dark and slim beside her.
"I envy you," Greta said wistfully. "You have your whole life before you. But none of us knows how long that life will be. My life could end tomorrow." "All the more reason to wear beautiful clothes and play beautiful music,"
Greta winked, shaking off the seriousness that had them both frowning.
"Now, you must be sure and invite your brother. He will be so proud of his little sister. Plus, it will be wise to let others see you have a protector."
The certainty that the night would end in disaster had Eva rushing home after Greta's shopping spree and practicing her violin deep into the night, apologizing to the other refugees, who endured hour after hour of frenzied music. When it grew late, she banished herself to the church to allow the convent to rest, and continued playing and praying, plotting her performance as if her life depended on it. For deep down, she believed it did. The dress was simple, but the black silk gleamed and fell around her slim form, giving her an understated elegance. Her hair was carefully curled and deeply parted,
tucked behind her ear on one side, where a dangling diamond played hide-and-seek every time she turned her head. Her lips were red, and her dark eyes softly lined. She was pale, but her skin was pearly, and it looked dramatic against the ebony dress. She stood on a small stage, all alone in the very center, and she raised the roof and the hair on his neck, piece after glorious piece. The audience clapped, and there was no conversation, even hushed and polite, when she played. She'd been waiting in front of his building that morning, her eyes tired and her nerves raw. And when she'd told him about the gala and he'd seen her fear, he had swallowed his own and bit back his insistence that she go into hiding. It had been a constant refrain in his head. Hide her, hide her, hide her. She'd refused every time, insisting now would be no different, so he would be strong for her instead.
Why are you afraid, Ava? You've been doing this all your life. You are a magnificent violinist. You have played for thousands. Surely you can play for a mere handful.
She had dropped her face into her hands, and he had shoved his fists into the pockets of his cassock to hide his tremors. She was afraid because she would be a Jewish girl in a room full of German police. The same reason he wanted to whisk her away and lock her in the cloister.
"I don't want to share this with them," she had whispered. "My talent is mine. My skill is mine. Mine and Felix's. And I don't want to entertain them. I don't want to give them pleasure or enjoyment. I want to spit in their soup. I want to break dishes and poison their wine. I do not want to play for them."
He had laughed so he wouldn't weep.
"You will play, and you will be magnificent. You will be the victor, knowing that you are Eva Rosselli and they are applauding for a Jew."
Her mouth had trembled. Then the trembling became a broad smile. She had curtsied deeply right there on the street, and when she stood, she had smirked at him.
"I think you have a little devil in you, my white angel. I must be rubbing off on you."
She was definitely rubbing off on him, rubbing him raw and wearing him thin. In the last hour, he had aged 10 years. He stood at the back of the room, unable to dine while she played, even though his stomach growled at the scents in the room. He'd politely refused the place that had been set for him, and kept his cross in his hand and his eyes glued to her face. He was terrified for her and proud of her all at once. He wanted to swoop her up and carry her to safety, and at the same time he wanted the world to listen to her play. He wanted to witness her triumph over the people who would, at the very least, turn their backs to her plight, and at the worst, kill her if they knew who she was. Still, she played, exultant and brilliant, powerful in her vulnerability, a conquering army of one. And the audience had no idea they were bested. When she finally lowered her instrument and bowed, signaling the end of her performance, she tucked her violin and her bow against her side, and her eyes found his. He could see her terror even as she smiled graciously and inclined her head, acknowledging her audience. Her posture regal, she glided from the small dais, pausing as Captain von Essen stepped forward to assist her down the few steps. He escorted her to the side and seemed to be congratulating her effusively. He should congratulate her. Ava had made him look very good. He murmured something in her ear, his mouth hovering too close. And Angelo saw her stiffen even as she shook her head, smiling but refusing him. He leaned into her once more, obviously insisting on something. And he placed an envelope in her hand. Angelo felt rage shoot through his belly, and his temperature climb beneath his stiff collar. He held himself back, knowing his part, knowing the genteel subservience people expected from him. But he exhaled in relief as Captain von Essen stepped back, and Ava moved away from him. She walked toward the exit, nodding and smiling as she made her way through the glittering people and the tables laden with rich food and the best Italian wine in a city of starving people. She kept walking as she neared him, and he followed her out of the large dining room to the cloakroom where she'd stored her violin case.
"What did he say?"
Angelo asked, his voice pitched just above a whisper. Eva checked behind her coat, behind every wrap and every corner before she answered him.
"Greta is insisting that I take a room here at the hotel. The arrangements have already been made. Captain von Essen says I have earned it."
She showed him the key and the envelope filled with banknotes. The rage in his stomach turned into an inferno. "Does he think you will join him there?" Eva's eyes shot to his face, and she shook her head instantly.
"No, I really don't think that's what he's implying. Greta is here with him, Angelo. You saw her. I am well aware of what he is capable of, but he has never been inappropriate with me."
"You can't stay here, Eva. I don't trust him."
"I don't either. But I don't think his intentions are lecherous. I'm worried about something else."
Angelo raised his eyebrows in question.
"I think they are going to raid Santa Cecilia tonight. He knows I board there. He doesn't want me there when it goes down."
"How do you know this?"
he asked, the ramifications sending his thoughts in a million different directions.
"He said something in the office today, something about the evening's activities. He was on the phone with Lieutenant Colonel Kepler. I thought he was talking about this."
She tossed her hand in the direction of the ballroom and swept a hand down her dress.
"But there was another man, by the last name of Koch, who came to the office 3 times last week. He is some kind of squadristi leader."
When Angelo heard the name, he swore and crossed himself simultaneously, and then crossed himself again to cancel out his dual reaction. He wondered some days if he was cut out to be a priest. He had a foul mouth. He blamed it on the American in him.
"Koch is a notorious Jew hunter," he said. "He's been on Monsignor O'Flaherty's tail the last few months. Lieutenant Colonel Kepler, too. But why Santa Cecilia?"
"I don't think it's just Santa Cecilia. I think it may be every church, convent, and monastery in Trastevere."
"And what makes you think tonight?"
"Captain von Essen told me I should stay here at the hotel to avoid trouble. I asked him if he could just provide me with a car, but he said Trastevere wouldn't be safe tonight."
"We have to get word to the sisters," Angelo said.
The Villa Medici was a good distance from Trastevere, and even farther from the Vatican.
"There are telephones in every suite. I heard the women talking in the powder room. They were all highly impressed. I'm sure they are all looking forward to eavesdropping on each other's conversations."
She held out the key enthusiastically. He took it, his unease growing as he stared down at it.
"We'll ask for another room. We'll switch," he said abruptly. "Come with me."
They approached the registration desk, but Eva held back when Angelo put a warning hand on her arm.
"Let me," he whispered. "Stand here and look frightened."
"That won't be hard to do,"
she murmured. Angelo understood completely. His own heart was pounding heavily beneath his cassock. But he smiled easily and nodded at the man behind the glossy mahogany registration desk, who took his hand and kissed it, as if he wasn't sure if Angelo were someone important or not.
"Signore, I need your help," Angelo said, sotto voce. "My sister is staying here at the hotel. She is a renowned violinist, and she played for the dignitaries who are in attendance at the gala this evening. She is very beautiful, you understand."
He paused so the concierge could verify this truth for himself. The little man with the slick black hair and the neat little mustache peered around Angelo's shoulder and eyed Eva. His eyes widened slightly.
Yes, I see, he said awkwardly.
as if he wasn't sure whether to agree that she was beautiful or refrain from commenting on a priest's sister.
She is receiving some unwanted attention from one of the guests. No one especially important, but I would like her to be moved, if possible. Unfortunately, he saw her coming out of her room, and my sister is now a little frightened.
Oh, yes, Padre. Of course. I understand.
The concierge took the key from Angelo's hand and consulted his ledger.
Will you be staying with your sister? He asked judiciously.
Angelo tried not to react or think about what those words could entail.
For a while, I would like to make sure she is all right. Yes, Padre.
The man bobbed and whisked out two keys with a tidy little nod. Then he crossed himself, as if it had been a while since his last confession. Angelo didn't know whether to smile or sigh. He had a tendency to make people chatty or nervous. It didn't hurt that this man was nervous. He'd been easy to persuade.
Do we need to move the lady's things to her new room?
No, that won't be necessary. She was so upset she was ready to leave the hotel altogether. I put her things in the cloakroom while she played. It will be easy enough to retrieve them.
Very good, signore. I mean, padre. Very good.
The man bobbed his head and crossed himself again. The suite was lavish and large behind double doors with a small foyer that opened up into an elegant sitting room and well-appointed bathroom beyond that. The sitting room was built around the large windows that overlooked the Spanish steps. But Angelo didn't waste time staring out at the backdrop. There were 10 monasteries, convents, and churches sheltering Jews in Trastevere, with more Jews sprinkled among another 20 families in the area. If the whole west side was to be raided, the whole west side would need to be warned. He was put through to the Vatican and reached an assistant of Monsignor O'Flaherty. Angelo asked that he be told that O'Malley had called with news of the midnight mass being conducted that evening in Trastevere. Midnight mass was code for a night raid. There was a one-word warning that he had put in place with a few trusted runners who had access to telephones. People who could get a warning to a nearby convent, monastery, or religious institution sheltering refugees. Most convents and monasteries were not equipped with phones. Few places were. And getting someone to answer, hear the warning, understand what it meant, and then pass it on would be almost miraculous. Angelo began the laborious task of waiting to be put through, via operator, over party lines that were far from private, sharing a message anyone could listen in on. But eventually, one by one, he was able to convey the warning to every runner except for the one for Santa Cecilia. He would have to warn them in person.
"You can't go. What if there is a raid and you are there and Captain von Essen sees you?"
"I have to go," he said simply. "I have to. Stay here. I promise I will come back for you."
She nodded, just once. Her face tight and her eyes huge and frightened in her beautiful face. He could see from her expression that she thought it was too dangerous, that to her it felt like her father heading to Austria all over again, destined for disaster. But she didn't try to stop him, and he was struck by her courage. She rose and followed him to the door, a slim silhouette in a long black dress, a candle in the darkness.
"I was so proud of you tonight. Felix would have been proud, too. You are a remarkable woman, Eva Bianco. A remarkable woman," he said sincerely.
She looked as if she were holding back tears, and he turned away before he weakened and took her in his arms, pulling the door shut behind him instead. He was halfway down the stairs before he realized he had called her Eva Bianco. Not Rosselli, like it was her actual name. Like she was truly his. Chapter 18. The Crypt. Angelo was only a block from the Villa Medici, moving as quickly as his leg and cane would allow, when a long black car slid up alongside him and the window was lowered, revealing the top portion of Captain von Essen's face. He was alone in the back seat.
"I'm sure you are aware it is after curfew, and even a man in your position can get in some trouble, Father Bianco," he said silkily.
"I have a permit, and I don't live far. A priest's work is never done."
Angelo smiled and sighed, but his heart was pounding. The captain had murdered Aldo Finzi, and there was something very off about him. Maybe it was his tidy ways and his soft-spoken delivery that didn't quite mask his glee at being a proud, card-carrying member of the Reich. He was the kind that inflicted torture while mournfully telling his victims it was all their fault.
"I will give you a ride, Father. Climb in."
Angelo did not want a ride. He hesitated, unsure of how to refuse.
"I insist," the captain said quietly. "You must let me do this as a courtesy to your sister, at the very least. You are there tonight to support her, I'm sure. Now you find yourself in a predicament, walking home after curfew."
Angelo walked around the car, but the driver was quick to hop out and open the door. The courtesy made him breathe a little easier.
"I thought I saw your wife with you this evening, Captain,"
Angelo mentioned as the door was closed behind him. She was not with him any more, and Angelo's anxiety rose once more.
"Yes, she was. She had some friends she wanted to visit with. I had business to attend to. A military man's work is never done either, I fear. We have that in common."
"I'm sure that is true," Angelo said politely, folding his hands in his lap.
"Eva was wonderful tonight," the captain murmured. "Magical. It was such a treat to hear her play. Herr Himmler was most impressed. Lieutenant Colonel Kepler as well."
"Yes, she was wonderful."
Angelo wouldn't let himself think of Himmler or Kepler or the attention they had given Eva. If he dwelled on it, he would do something dangerous, something stupid, and he couldn't afford to do either.
"You two are close, yes? She told me she came to Rome to be near you. I was always close with my older sister. She was like a second mother to me. Of course, that's not how it is with you and Eva, is it? You are the father."
He laughed at his play on words. Angelo bristled but shook his head and shrugged easily.
"No, it is not like that. We are only 2 years apart." "It is a good thing you are a priest. Otherwise, people might get the wrong idea," the captain said softly.
He was quiet then, staring out the window, and Angelo watched as the driver missed one turn and then another. He didn't know where they were going, but they weren't taking him home. The car rolled up in front of the church of Santa Cecilia, treating the big piazza like a parking lot. The captain reached for the door. Angelo's stomach sank.
"I have some business here. You can help me with it, Father. You speak German so well, and my Italian is limited. I may need a translator."
A truck pulled up behind the Mercedes, and a handful of SS men jumped out, rifles in hand.
"What are you doing?"
Angelo gasped, climbing out of the car and rushing to get in front of the man with guns. He stretched out his hands, slowing them, bidding them to stop, praying that the people inside would have time to hide or prepare.
"It is a raid, Father,"
von Essen said simply.
"The Catholic Church is disdainful of our laws. We have reason to believe there are Jews being hidden all over Rome in convents just like this one."
"But there is no one here. I know this convent. I know the sisters here."
"But of course you do. Your own sister rents a room here. But you understand. We must check for ourselves."
"No, I do not understand. Places of worship are sanctuaries. There is a cloister inside these walls. No one violates the cloister. Not a priest, or a German, or a Jew.
The Catholic Church, the Pope himself, cannot control a single SS officer.
You do realize that?